Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about today the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg from a biblical perspective. Should we as Christians look at it as God's intervention to give an opportunity to replace liberal justice with one that is more conservative, that will take a stand for the protection of faith, family, and the future of our constitutional republic that we've experienced for all of these years?
You have a decision there in your hands. What's the name of that?
This is the Obergefell decision.
Okay. Dealing with homosexual marriage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's interesting because I had a discussion the other day with a handful of theologians, not nearly of your caliber, but the discussion was, you know, what was the place of government in that decision, and what was the place of the court in that decision? By the way, I took a tour of the White House not long after that, and you know they lit the White House up.
Mm-hmm.
In the rainbow colors.
Rainbow colors, the all sodomite right. LGBTQ.
When I took the tour of the White House, the first door I entered, you know, after three levels of Secret Service screening to make sure I wasn't carrying a bomb or something, it's amazing because you walk through the doors and there are the White House is arrayed with all sorts of pictures. Well, they had two pictures, one of a party celebrating that decision and the other of the White House lit up that way. And those decisions are made by, I think, the First Lady as to how the White House is to be decorated. That was very important to that family, to mm-hmm. Barack Obama, and that decision.
It was in 2015.
But it's interesting to me because for the believer, many times the question mark was, well, what should we do? What should we do? Isn't that the place of government? Well, I'd say for anybody as a believer, search through Article 3 and see if there's any authority for an Article 3 justice to redefine a word. They don't get to do that. When we search through the Bible, we don't get to redefine words to make them mean what we want them to mean.
Right.
You know, advocacy or judicial advocacy is almost as dangerous as the heresy that we get from pulpit advocacy on a position that's not backed up by the Bible, right?
Absolutely.
And when you twist that, they twisted things to pieces. First Amendment of the Constitution, Congress shall make no law with respect to an establishment of religion, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. I think a compelling argument could be made that government has no place in our marriages. You know, literally,
that's the reason it's called holy matrimony.
That's right.
It's a biblical precept.
It's a religious institution. And the idea that government can come in and say, well, you are and you aren't, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of these governmental agencies, they go, well, if we regulate it, we can charge for it. We regulate it, we can charge a fee for it. But in that particular decision, if we recognize contracts, that's one thing. But to call something marriage, that's redefining a word. Once you redefine a word, the slippery slope is, what do words mean anymore? Do they mean only what that court says they mean? Can we redefine a foot? Because that was kind of the old king thing. You know, the foot might change based on the foot of the king. We have an office of weights and measures. We have an official foot in the United States. We have an official pound in the United States. We don't let the courts or the legislature or the president step in and say, we're going to redefine this word, boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
If we allowed that, we allow for Pandora's box to be opened, and it's been opened not just once or twice, but now for decades.
That's exactly though, Greg, what she did in the Obergefell versus Hodges in 2015. Let me just read you a little blurb about that argument. This landmark case granted same-sex couples the right to marry in all 50 states as a former officiant of same-sex weddings and an advocate for LGBTQ rights. It is believed that Ginsburg's outspokenness affected public opinion in this matter. During oral argument, she called out the regressive attitude of John Birch, the lawyer representing the states who wish to uphold same-sex marriage ban, as well as Justice John Roberts and Anthony Kennedy, who wondered whether the court would overturn marital tradition. Quote, this is from Ginsburg, quote, marriage was a relationship of dominant male to a subordinate female, she told them in her arguments. To cling to marriage the way it once was, she also derided a procreation debate about by asking about whether a 70-year-old heterosexual couple would be allowed to marry when clearly they could not procreate either. So
we're back in Roman Empire days. Literally, once you've opened that box up, you literally can't say no to group marriages. You can't. I mean, the old Mormon.
That's where it's headed, in that open Pandora's box.
You can't say no to marrying an animal. You can't say no to marrying a stinking bookcase, because once marriage is redefined and it becomes whatever's in vogue at the, you know, you got pedophiles wanting to normalize relationships with minors today. You can't say no to, because that's a moral distinction. You can't shove your morals. Haven't we heard this from the left over and over? You can't shove your morals down my throat. You know, they shove their immorality down the throats of believers every day. And of course, the normalization, now they want to call this MAP, minor attracted person. Have y'all heard that term? You're going to hear that term.
Rather than pedophile, it's a MAP.
We're going to try to they're massaging the laws now in the state of California, and that's the first step. Once you see California do that, Florida's next. You're going to have some buffoon in the Florida legislature that will recommend such a piece of propose such a piece of legislation to nullify the criminal act and the registration requirement for a pedophile.
Yes,
it's perverse, the road that we're on. But I think, back to the subject matter, do we correct course now? Can we correct course now? What will it look like? By the way, the court for decades now has been left. You know, to recenter the court, today leftist Democrats will tell you, if we let Trump appoint a justice, he will be changing the balance of the court. And you go, the court has been swinging left for decades and decades. The 1973 decision, Byron White was Ruth Bader Ginsburg's predecessor.
That's right.
Byron White was a Democrat, but he was a Democrat that literally had a little more balance. I mean, he understood a little better what the Constitution had to say. When I say what it had to say, what original intent was, and he was not willing to step all over original intent in order to get a progressive agenda through. By the way, there's a 7-2 decision, and if you listen to the arguments, by the way, folks, you can go online to the Supreme Court's page and listen to those historical arguments. I challenge you, listen to those arguments, and you get a different flavor for how these things really play out. And a lot of the argument at that time was for privacy. You know, this is a private act between a physician and the patient, right? That sounds really good. The problem is there are two patients that walked in to that doctor's office, right? And many times only one patient walks back out. Interestingly enough, this Byron White wrote a dissenting opinion. He was one of the two that dissented, and he said in part of his dissent, as an exercise of raw judicial power, listen to that terminology, raw judicial power, the court perhaps has the authority to do what it does today, but in my view, its judgment is an improvident and extravagant exercise of the power of judicial review that the Constitution extends to the court. Understand, he understood this was a leap, this was a jump. Now, you have people say, that's settled law. Why don't you go back, Brown versus Board of Education. You look at decisions that sometimes were bad decisions that had to be overturned. If we always say the Supreme Court has spoken to this issue, now that's one thing for a lesser court. When a lesser court sees something, they under stare decisis, they need to submit typically to what the Supreme Court has already decided. But when the Supreme Court realizes we've made a mistake, what should they do? Oh, it's decided law. We can't change anything. No, we've never taken the opinion that the Supreme Court can't fix their own mistakes. We also, somehow or another, have this misguided presumption that the Supreme Court justices ought to be life appointments. If there's not good conduct there, when you have a Supreme Court justice that starts quoting international law in order to make their decision, guess what? They're no longer adhering to the Constitution. Their oath says that they'll support, protect, and defend the Constitution. That needs to be their primary, and not just primary. That ought to be their only focus. The
sole focus, yes.
Their sole focus. Now you do have the provision in that supreme law of the land that you have to also include treaties that were made in pursuance thereof, and this and that and the other. However, we have a court that's gone way left. The idea that we're going to change the balance of the court, there's no balance to the court. It's turned into a political body. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg was nominated, I think she got 86 votes or 90 votes? Democrats and Republicans. Republicans for decades have said, if you bring forward a qualified nominee, we won't hold an ideological litmus test. Now, the left doesn't do that. They immediately want to know Roe v. Wade. They can't ask the question directly, so they ask it 20 different ways. When I say they can't ask it directly, you can't ask a justice how they will decide on a particular case, you know, coming up examples of issues. You have to pick around and see what their judicial philosophy is like. But they, at the end of the day, they have an ideological litmus test. And the left right now, what did they do under Kavanaugh? You know, Gorsuch did a little better, but Kavanaugh was a split decision. Right now, you have people that are already telling you they will or won't vote, and they haven't even heard who the nominee is.
That's right.
Tell me there's not an ideological litmus test taking place.
All righty, absolutely.
Whoever is appointed.
And this is the reason, Greg, that it is so vital for us to understand from a Christian perspective. That's the reason we're talking about it today. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her legacy, examined from a biblical perspective. What does the Bible say? And Greg, what we've been talking about is the fact that, and you can go back to every, not some, not partial, every decision that was made by the courts that involved Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her position was against, even if the courts ruled in favor of an issue, her dissenting position was against it if it had anything to do with morals, ethics, and values that would protect and uphold the family and the faith and the future of our Constitution. In fact,
how does that get the tag of defender of feminism or equal treatment? How in the world feminism today somehow does not mean that we're going to respect and there's going to be balance and we're going to equal treatment. That doesn't mean that anymore. Somehow or another, you know, feminism and equal treatment is code word for pro-abortion. Doesn't it seem that way to you?
Yes. In fact, that's the whole bent. In fact, it goes back further than the sodomite marriage case. And by the way, the Bible is very, very clear. God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Genesis chapter 19, verse 24 and 25, fire and brimstone rained down from heaven and destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah and all of the plains round about simply because of the sodomite issue. And yet here's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that was the major proponent of the sodomite marriage law through the U.S. Supreme Court being changed in 2015. In fact, Greg, most are not aware of it, but even prior to that, she wanted to set the stage in 2013, I believe it was, and we'll look at it in a moment, where she had also officiated in a wedding for a sodomite couple then. But in 1996, just 3 years after her appointment, the United States versus Virginia was one of the cases. And it was the Virginia Military Academy, called VMI, was the county's last remaining all-male public undergraduate college or university. But by the end of the year, that would no longer be the case, thanks in part to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. United States filed a suit against the school, arguing that the gender-exclusive admission policy violated equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment, according to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so it destroyed the efficacy of that institution, although there was another institution that was a all-female institution, that if a female wanted to have the same training, could go to that additional or that other institution. It was called the Mary Baldwin University. But no, they wanted to destroy that all-male university.
They have a very interesting thing when it comes to gender inclusion. They've created their own chaos, because think of each one of these decisions in light of what they consider is a society that now recognizes dozens of different genders. Even looking at the Wuhan flu, they give numbers and you can break the stats down, male and female, but you don't see statistics for all the other dozens of 38 different or 48 different genders. So they've created a little bit of a catch 22 or chaotic mess for themselves along that line. It'll be interesting to see what the days and weeks ahead hold. By the way, for anybody looking into the future, here we're so many days away from an election.
45 days.
The stock market's down. Dow's down today like nearly 1,000 points. People are already nervous about the – not just will Trump be reelected, will Sleepy Joe be elected. That's not all. Now it's – are they going to burn our cities down?
Yes.
When they don't have a decision 24, 48, 72 hours later – by the way, this is another catch-22. if we have a 4-4 split decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, I mean, the Gore v. Bush, Bush v. Gore case, literally it was granted certiorari. They took it before the U.S. Supreme Court on an expedited basis. What happens if we end up in a case where, you know, all 50 states, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of attorneys are amassed on both sides of this election?
The socialist Marxist Democrats have already hired 800 attorneys to do battle over the very issue that you're speaking of. And that's the thing that I want our listeners to understand today is if President Trump does not nominate and the Senate approve an additional justice, this case for the election, if there's no clear winner by January the 20th at noontime on 2021, President Donald J. Trump will be forced to leave, required by Constitution to leave the office. And if it's expedited to the Supreme Court, it's a 4-4 decision. It will be reverted back then to the House of Representatives and Nancy Pelosi, and the squad will be able to appoint president.
Think about the because it'll go back to a vote in their chamber. So the reality is, we're looking at chaos. We're looking at absolute chaos in the streets.
Kamala Harris said that the continued riots, that the riots and the burning should continue even after the election.
They're asking for the chaos. They're asking for the chaos. And knowing that more chaos will be present, well, that's all the more reason, I believe, that the left may want to leave this seat open. Yeah, they'd like to see a Biden appointment. I understand that. But kind of analyzing a worst-case scenario, you start doing the math. And real quickly, I mean, we recognize in the state of Florida, it's a just about evenly divided state.
Yes.
The state could go either direction. And, of course, when you have one side that's willing to cheat, I believe, much more so than the other side.
Too many from the tri-states and the Northeast that's moving to Florida.
Yeah. But on the cheating front, you know, 14 ballots show up in my mailbox, and they have different names on them and all this stuff. And I've got one of them that says Greg Youngblood. I'm going to fill out the one for Greg Youngblood, you know, and send it back in. Pray that the postman doesn't throw it away because they see an R on the back of it. And that might happen, by the way, folks.
Yes. But we've got 300,000 in the postal union, and they're upset with Donald Trump, and the 300,000 of the postal union workers have already cast their decision that, therefore, Joe Biden, what do you think could happen to the ballots?
Go figure. Now, by the way, I have video after video after video and case after case after case where postal workers have disposed of mail in the dumpsters. They've stacked mail up in their garages and storage units in order instead of delivering. We've seen in this last election, 1,600 or 1,800 pieces or ballots actually showed up in another jurisdiction, just never made it to their destination. I personally, this sounds terrible, Jacksonville, Florida, you know, circa 1995, an election campaign I was in the middle of, I had 22 or 24,000 mail pieces that I mailed out. I literally personally, as the candidate, carried them down to the post office, the distribution center downtown Jacksonville, and put them in. By the way, election postage, political postage, you pay third-class rate, and you're supposed to get first-class service. In Jacksonville, you take it to the distribution center. It's in walking order. Recipients should get that the next day or the following day, 2 days at the most, inside Jacksonville. Easy distribution. So I delivered to the post office, I believe it was Wednesday of the week before the election. So people should be receiving those on Thursday, on Friday, on Saturday, and on Monday, and even Tuesday, the day of the election. So 5 delivery days. My mother received hers 2 weeks after the election. Different people came to me and they go, why did you send this out after the election? Tell me, folks, what happened to my mail piece? Mm-hmm. What happened to it? I'm not alleging anything. This is just anecdotal, but I'll tell you right now, folks, things in the post office may not always get where they're supposed to go when they're supposed to go.
That's exactly it, and that's the thing that concerns me, Greg. In fact, continuing with some of the thoughts with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and some of her decisions, it was in 2018 that Ginsburg played a hand in the striking down of the legislation that allows non-citizens to be expelled from the country. As a result of that, multitudes of those that are illegals coming into the country, and they need to be immediately expelled. That law that was stricken down by one of the votes was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That prevents that from taking place even today. And we wonder why we have such problems at the border and with those coming in.
So on the left, you have folks that don't want criminal aliens to be deported. Criminals that are in jail due to COVID, we're going to release up in the Northeast, particularly New York. They've released like better than 40% of the criminals out of the jails in that jurisdiction. De Blasio said there are fewer people in jail that have been there in decades, and the city is better off and safer for it. By the way, anybody in New York, does anybody believe that? At the same time, they're releasing people out of jails. Folks like John MacArthur in California, they may get put in jail. By the way, I loved his answer. You know, he said, I've done a lot of different kinds of ministries. I hadn't done a jail ministry yet, so go ahead. Go ahead, put me in jail. But understand what I'm saying, folks, is that the left is fine with turning criminals loose into the streets.
That's right.
They're fine with those criminals voting. They're fine with those criminals crossing, re-entering the country, crossing into the country, getting benefits, and they're fine with them voting. By the way, jurisdiction after jurisdiction allow illegal aliens to vote in local elections. They consider them stakeholders because they're in that jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Their kids are in the schools, so they're stakeholders. So now illegal aliens have rights and all, but by the way, if you go to church, we might put you in jail.
That's right. That's antithetical. Anything's called biblical truth. Yeah, this is the reason I want our listeners, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. That telephone number is 831-0917. 831-0917. What are your reactions, response to the dialogue and discussion you hear taking place today? You're in favor of President Trump immediately making an appointment to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And do you want Mitch McConnell to immediately bring it before a hearing with the Senate? What are your thoughts on that? Where do you stand on that? Greg, here's another issue that Ruth Bader Ginsburg played a hand in. It was the vote against Hobby Lobby. Most are aware of that decision in 2014. Hobby Lobby is a Christian privately held company, and they did not want to be forced to provide abortion coverage for their employees. And yet that vote came down, and it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, though it was upheld in favor of Hobby Lobby, that vote against it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah. She was the one that made a dissenting statement.
You have Little Sisters of the Poor there. I bet you that's one, too. I'd have to look at that decision, but I'd lay odds.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was one of the ones that voted for that to be for that to take place. I believe we have a caller on the line. Go over the question and comment, please.
Yes, I feel like I have come up with a good name for the Democratic Socialist. I call them reprobate knuckle walkers. They just have no idea. They have no insight into their ideology, and all they want to do is tear down and destroy America.
Well, brother, I believe you're exactly on target. We can look at the socialist, Marxist, BLM, communist, Democrats and understand that every vote that they take, everything that they want to do is antithetical to biblical truth. For example, this is the reason we're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Just about if not complete in all that she did since 1993 on the court, a vote that she cast was against biblical truth, against faith, family, and the future of our America under our constitutional way of life and our Bill of Rights in particular.
I've got some real anxiety. I know our program's about running out. You know, we're running out of time. But I have real anxiety with believers today, and I know there are believers listening right now that they have a problem with Donald Trump. They're you know, part of a Never Trumper, you know, group or whatever. They have a problem with Donald Trump and his tweets, and they have a problem with Donald Trump and his talk, the way he communicates. And he's not the Gipper, you know. He's not Ronald Reagan. He doesn't communicate on that wise in that fashion. But what would you say to them? I mean, I look at Donald Trump, and I'm going, the decisions, his policies have been more conservative than any president since Reagan.
He's done more for religious liberties than the past 10 presidents put together.
Okay.
Can I? Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I've spoken to many of my Christian friends, and you've got to be out of your mind to vote Democratic. I mean, if you look at the platforms and the hostility and what they stand for, I mean, you're just totally uninformed if you vote Democratic. And there are Christian, well, I don't know what to call them. I'm flabbergasted that they would, they're Democratic all their life. He's for this little guy, blah, blah, blah. And they won't listen to anything else.
I, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Here's where some of my anxiety comes from, because I have some very close friends that are professing believers, and one, we used to have breakfast together just about every Saturday morning. Now, I've not seen him since, it's probably 6 months into Donald Trump's administration, and we'd have prayer time together, and I would ask that we pray for our leaders, because the Bible says we ought to do that. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I was praying for Barack Obama. I think the anxiety started then, because I prayed that the Lord would get a hold of his heart, get a hold of his life, that he would come to know Jesus Christ in a real and a personal way. Because if a believer is in that office and they're making godly decisions, wise decisions, the nation's going to be better off. Now today, and again, you're the senior theologian here. When I talk about a house divided, you know the scriptural context. You had those that were trying to allege that Jesus performed miracles using the power of Beelzebub.
Right.
And Jesus scolded them and said that a house divided cannot stand. Mm-hmm. A house divided cannot stand. That resonates with me. Now, Lincoln gave a house divided speech talking about the nation. But I see things through this lens where I'm going, you know, I watched as witches got together and cursed Kavanaugh. But before they cursed Kavanaugh, came together in their group of covens, whatever they witches do. But they cursed Kavanaugh. Before they had done that, they had got together and cursed Donald Trump. Where do you think witches get their, you know, claim that their power comes from? It's not Jesus Christ.
It's from Satan, demonic.
It's satanic. It's satanic. It's demonic. I said the other day, when radical leftists, anarchists, witches, socialists, rioters, looters, arsonists, and abortionists oppose Trump, I know he's the right choice. Now, do I rightly apply that scripture? Now, I'm not comparing Donald Trump with Jesus Christ, but I do. You know, sometimes they say you can you know your enemies by their friends, or you know, the old enemy of my friend. There's a rationale. Essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, birds of a feather flock together. Yeah. There we go. I was punished as a kid one time because, yeah, I didn't do anything wrong. But well, I was in a group of other kids that did. Well, if you see this group of kids that are anarchists and looters and all, and their man is Joe Biden, and the person they hate is Donald Trump, I think that almost makes the decision for me. For any believer, I have to ask the question, please tell me why you stand where you stand.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to understand that if we say that we love the Lord, we must take a stand on biblical truth. Biblical truth says that what Ruth Bader Ginsburg did was antithetical to all that God has given us in His Word. We need to take a stand on that. Pray for our president. Pray that his nominee will be speedily listened to, heard, debated, and voted on in the Senate. And pray that God will intervene in this November 3rd election. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.